Kelly and I are hunkered down tonight under quarantine, and as the outside world is changing like it never has before, we're going to take you on a little sweet escape to a well-traveled part of the research theme park, Sugarland. A place where people never find what they're looking for, but everyone thinks they're enjoying the ride.
Welcome to the Carlette Psychiatry Podcast, keeping psychiatry honest since 2003.
I'm Chris Aiken, the editor-in-chief of the Carlette Psychiatry Report.
And I'm Kelly Newsom, a psych MP and a dedicated reader of every issue. Sugar. People say it's harder to get off than cocaine. Patients with atypical depression crave it and are known to say that it's the only thing that makes them feel better.
Coke lifts your spirits, boosts your energy, gives you the refreshment you're looking for. Pick up a carton tomorrow.
But a new study calls all that into question. Sugar may actually worsen mood, not just over the long term, but even 15 to 30 minutes after eating it. The finding comes from a meta-analysis of 31 studies involving nearly 1,300 adults, and today we'll interview the lead investigator, Dr. Konstantinos Mentansis at Humboldt University of Berlin. But first, a little background.
We've known for years that eating too much sugar increases depression over the long term. That comes from large epidemiologic studies, including some that controlled for reverse causation. In other words, there always exists a possibility that people with depressive tendencies are simply more likely to turn to sugar, and that that could explain this association. Last year, a meta-analysis of 10 of those studies found an odds ratio of 1.3 for sugary beverages on depression. What that means is that consuming a lot of sweet drinks raises the risk of depression by about 30%. Those studies were not controlled, though, and we're not likely to see controlled studies of high sugar diet in humans, because that would be unethical. Instead, it's from animal studies that we find confirmation of the sugar-depression link, and those tell us something about the biology behind that association as well.
There are several ways that sugar might cause depression. The first one is that sugar reduces levels of brain-derived neurotrophic factor, BDNF, a chemical signaler that's involved in brain growth. BDNF goes down in depression and up with exercise or antidepressant medication. Secondly, sugar increases inflammation and obesity, both of which are linked to depression. 3. Sugar messes up the metabolic system. It causes spikes of insulin and other hormones, and it ultimately disrupts neurohormones that are linked to depression. 4. Sugar is addictive, and like other addictions, it might downregulate the dopamine system over time, causing tolerance, anhedonia, or lack of pleasure and depression. But none of these findings are really new or surprising, and just about every medical society from cancer to cardiology has come out against sugar. The American Heart Association has specific recommendations for sugar intake, and their limits are in line with good brain health as well as good heart health.
Here are their maximum daily allowance of added sugar. For babies under age 2, zero added sugar. For children 2 to 18, 6 teaspoons or 25 grams of added sugar a day. For adult men, it's 9 teaspoons or 38 grams. And for adult women, it's 6 teaspoons or 25 grams, just like it is for children. So for most of us, just drinking half a can of Coca-Cola will reach our daily allowance. Now, those limits are for added sugar. Since January of 2020, nutrition labels are required to list added sugars separately from total sugars, because the total sugars contain natural sugars, for example, part of fruits, that really aren't bad for you.
Many of my patients want to reduce their sugar intake, but they say that it's hard to let go of, and they're aware of its long-term effects, but feel it does something good in the short term. Some use it to manage stress. For others, it's the only thing that they find pleasurable during depression. So I've always assumed the sugar did some good in the short term, but always with a long-term cost.
This new article changes that. The authors looked at 10 psychological measures, and none of them improved shortly after eating sugar. Those were alertness, calmness, contentedness, anger, confusion, depression, fatigue, tension, and vigor, as well as overall mood. In fact, alertness and fatigue were slightly worse after eating sugar. In the experiments, they had people answer questions about how they felt, as well as undergo neuropsychological tests after consuming a sugary beverage, or a placebo. The sugary beverage usually contained glucose, sucrose, fructose, some kind of natural sugar, and the placebo was an artificial sugar, one with no nutritional or caloric content.
Wait a minute. If the placebo is sweet, couldn't that improve mood and concentration? I mean, wouldn't people's dopamine light up when they drink artificial sweeteners?
Surprisingly, artificial sweeteners don't light up dopamine like sugar does. That comes from imaging studies of the brain's reward circuitry. But you're right, Kelly, that just anticipating sugar or tasting sweetness might conceivably improve concentration. And there are actually a handful of studies where they had people swish sugar in their mouth and spit it out without swallowing. And afterwards, they did better on cognitive tests. But the study we're looking at today is really about ingesting sugar. And it's asking whether eating a carb-rich meal or sugary meal really gives us the energy rush that lifts our mood and concentration the way we think it does.
Okay, so if sugar makes you feel a little worse in the short term and a lot worse in the long term, why do we keep eating it?
We turn to Dr. Mantansis to answer some of those questions. He wasn't able to speak with us by phone, but he kindly sent us written replies to our questions. Today, I'll play the role of Dr. Mantansis and read his replies while Kelly does the interview.
Dr. Mantansis, tell us what your study showed. What are the practical implications that we can bring to our patients?
Our goal was to look into the sugar rush hypothesis, the idea that consuming sugar can improve mood, increase our alertness, and make us less tired. However, we discovered with our meta-analysis that sugar ingestion does not seem to improve any aspect of mood. Interestingly, we found that people who were given sugar reported feeling less alert and more tired within the first hour after its consumption, compared with those who were given a non-sugar sweetener. Our study focused exclusively on healthy adults over the age of 18, so more studies and meta-analyses should be conducted to understand how sugar consumption might affect mood in clinical populations.
Is this just about sugar, or does it apply to simple carbs like bread and pasta?
In this first study, we only looked into sugar consumed alone, not in combination with other nutrients. We do not currently know how mood is affected by combinations of carbohydrates with other nutrients, such as protein, fat, or fiber. We definitely need more experimental studies and meta-analyses to see what happens when carbohydrates are combined with those nutrients. However, we are currently working on a second meta-analysis investigating how combinations of sugar with caffeine, for example, might affect mood. And I think that this is of great interest both for scientists and the public, because sugar is often consumed alongside caffeine, for example, in energy drinks.
Did the results surprise you in any way?
Just like most of us, I grew up believing in the idea that sugar can make you more alert and alleviate fatigue. However, going through the literature, we realized that most studies in recent years have not found any evidence to support this idea. And this seemed to be a very consistent pattern across the vast majority of recent studies. It was a striking realization, especially considering that most people genuinely believe that consuming sugar will make them feel better and more alert. They actually reach for sugary drinks to improve their mood.
If sugar doesn't have an acute benefit on mood or energy, what is left to explain why people are so drawn to eating it?
This is an interesting point that we have not had the chance to address in the present study, unfortunately. Of course, consumption of sugar can be very pleasurable for many people, but I think that the reason people feel that sugar can improve their mood is that sugar consumption might often coincide with people spending time with family and friends and performing fun activities, or, for example, rewarding themselves with a sugary treat after a job well done. The mood improvement, in that case, might be associated with the social or fun aspect of the activity rather than the consumption of sugar itself. But when it comes to sugar consumption in controlled laboratory settings, it looks like it might even lead to a negative mood.
One limitation to your study is that it focused on healthy adults. Is it possible that sugar might have different acute effects in depression? What do we know about that?
That is correct. There is a theory suggesting that conditions such as depression and anxiety can make patients crave and overconsume foods that are rich in carbohydrates and fat. Research has suggested that these groups might be overconsuming carbohydrates as a way of improving their mood. So, it could be that examining the effects of sugar consumption in clinical populations might yield completely different results. But again, this is something that future research should address.
What advice would you give someone who's about to take a 4-hour exam and wants to eat something for breakfast that will help them maintain their focus and energy?
I think the first thing I would suggest would be a good night's sleep. In terms of breakfast, I would suggest consuming something balanced. I am not a nutritionist, but I think that foods like fresh vegetables and whole grains could provide the necessary energy during a long exam.
Anything else you'd like us to know?
Although our study very clearly shows that sugar does not improve mood, a lot of people still find it enjoyable. So I would never say something like people should give up sugar altogether. A balanced diet is extremely important, but as long as we are mindful and careful about how much sugar we consume, indulging in sugary treats every once in a while is not such a big deal. But if we are reaching for sugary drinks and beverages to combat fatigue and increase our alertness, this would not be the best idea.
Thank you, Dr. Mantanzas. So I get it. The part of the reason that we think sugar makes us feel better is that we associate it with good times. Like the advertisement, things go better with Coke.
Hey, here's Ray Charles.
So, Dr. Aiken, if sugar doesn't make us feel better quickly, how does it become addictive?
You're right. Dr. Mantanzas' study really doesn't explain why sugar is addictive. And there's two reasons for that, I think. One is that for something to become addictive, it needs to bring really quick rewards. Not like after 15 minutes like he looked at, but after just a few minutes. And in addiction terms, rewarding does not mean that you feel good. It just means that some switch is flipped in the brain that makes you want to do it more. That's what addiction is about. Whether it's sugar or cocaine or nail biting, there's little pleasure in addiction and a lot of compulsion. But still, this new study does help us communicate better with patients. When patients want to come off sugar, it helps to let them know that they do not need it to feel good. In my own experience, most patients tell me that the withdrawal process lasts about 2 weeks after stopping sugar, and that after that they feel much better, less depressed, more energetic, and clearer cognition. Even their senses seem improved. Some report sharper hearing and vision.
So your patients get free of sugar cravings within 2 weeks? What about that study they're always mentioning, that sugar is more addictive than cocaine?
That comes from a handful of studies where rats were given free access to cocaine or sugar, and they actually preferred the sugar. They also preferred sugar to heroin. Patients often cite that study as a reason why it's hard to come off sugar, but the design doesn't tell us anything about withdrawal, only about preference. And this was in mice and rats, not in humans.
And when they come off sugar, what should they replace it with?
I don't know. Certainly not artificial sweeteners. The same kinds of studies that found higher rates of depression with sugar consumption have found even higher rates with artificial sweeteners. Artificial sweeteners have neurotoxic effects on the brain's memory center, the hippocampus. They also alter the gut microbiome and metabolic hormones in ways that increase the risk of diabetes, weight gain, and depression. What I'm saying applies to synthetic sugars, like aspartame, dextrose, and sucralose, not natural sweeteners like stevia and xylitol. Xylitol with an X, which many think is the best substitute for sugar. In fact, dentists recommend it because it doesn't harm the teeth, and xylitol is often the ingredient in gums like Spry, which we recommend for patients with dry mouth. Dry mouth is very bad for the teeth, and we don't want patients to use sugary chewing gums unless it's xylitol.
Here's something we can tell them. Healthy fats. This one comes from human studies. They found that when people turn to healthy fats like nuts, yogurt, almond butter, avocados, olive oil, salmon, and eggs, they don't crave sugar as much.
Sounds like a good breakfast. Join us next week, where we take a look at how the optimal antidepressant dose varies with age.
You can read the full articles and earn CME credits at thecarlettreport.com, where we have a special offer for our podcast listeners. You can get $30 off your first year subscription with the promo code PODCAST.
The Carlatt Report is one of few CME publications that depends entirely on subscribers. Thank you for helping us stay free of commercial support.